Coming up on Fronteras, there's a group of people that served their country and then after that military service committed a crime and were deported.
Actually, I joined the military because I wanted to become a citizen. I was going to be the first member of my family to become a citizen.
How many U.S. veterans are deported each year? No one knows, but a group of banished veterans in Mexico is trying to help. We'll also hear from San Antonio poet laureate Carmen Tafoya on her latest poetry and art book.
Los taquitos que traigo, los hice para ti, pa tu boca, que yo conozco muy bien. These tacos I made for you, for your mouth, whose taste I know so well. I know your belly too, and your hungers, your sighs and your desires, the rhythm of your chest, the softness of your breath.
A conversation with Carmen Tafoya on Rebozos, a celebration of women. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. The Veterans Day holiday this week reminded people of the sacrifices made by members of our military. There's a group of people who served their country and then, after that military service, committed a crime and were deported. From our Fronteras desk, Aaron Siegel talks to U.S. military veterans living near Tijuana.
Hector Barajas now lives in a rundown apartment in Rosarito, Mexico. He grew up in Compton, California, and served for 7 years in the Army. He thought that his military service would lead to full-fledged citizenship.
I was a legal resident when I entered the military in 1995. Got out in 2001. I had two honorable discharges. I was under the impression that I was a U.S. citizen automatically because of the recruiters.
That wasn't the case. Although military service can speed up the process of becoming a citizen, it's by no means automatic. Barajas got into trouble after leaving the military. He served a 3-year sentence in prison for discharging a firearm into a vehicle. He faced mandatory deportation, just like any other non-citizen. Barajas was brought across the border and dropped off in Tijuana.
Deported veterans, how's my officer, ma'am?
His rough apartment now serves as a drop-in shelter for a rotating cast of deported vets, as well as the headquarters of their makeshift organization, Banished Veterans.
What's up,
it's a cramped space inside a tiny complex, tucked behind a chain-link fence. From floor to ceiling, the walls are covered with posters and notes, whiteboards with names and phone numbers.
I'm doing what somebody did for me when I first got here. And, you know, we're supposed to take care of our, you know, you leave no man behind. So I'm a firm believer in taking care of these guys to the best of our abilities because this is a small apartment.
Fabian Rebolledo is a recent arrival. He's a Kosovo combat vet and a former paratrooper. He arrived just 4 months ago after 24 years in Los Angeles.
My deportation was due to a violation of probation, due to a insufficient funds check, $750.
Like Barajas, Rebolledo thought that military service would protect him.
I was a legal resident, and actually I joined the military because I wanted to become a citizen. I was going to be the first member of my family to become a citizen.
But before the bad check, Rebolledo had 2 DUI convictions. All of his crimes were nonviolent. They were still enough to ban him from the U.S. for the rest of his life. That's because of a 1996 immigration law that expanded the list of crimes considered to be aggravated felonies. The law even made some misdemeanor crimes result in permanent mandatory deportation for non-citizens. Barajas and advocates would like to see some judicial discretion come into play in these cases, taking military service into account. But right now, that's not happening. So, from the banned vet headquarters in his Rosarito apartment, Barajas has been trying to keep track of the numbers.
When I started doing this, I started a list just, you know, just for the hell of it. People want to know because Homeland Security is not doing it. I have 103 names already on my list deported to different countries around the world. Right here in Tijuana, Rosarito, I'm looking at anywhere from 500 to 1,000 deported veterans.
There's no way to confirm those numbers. Immigration and Customs Enforcement says they don't track deported veterans. Barajas is searching for other deported vets and trying to rally them and others. It's a lot like amateur detective work. He makes phone calls, follows leads, sends Facebook requests, and tracks social media.
We're keeping tabs on these guys just for our purposes and for just, you know, just to make sure that we can somehow maybe facilitate them.
Vets who commit crimes, do time, and are then deported can still be eligible for benefits. But it's impossible for them to collect most of them. There is one benefit they can and do collect: burial.
We had a guy that died about 4 months ago. He was deported. He was not allowed to go back. When he died, then they let his body go. And then they gave him a nice certificate. Thank you for serving our country. So when I die, then I can be buried as an American.
It's true. Unless they've been dishonorably discharged, the VA says all military veterans are entitled to burial in a national cemetery with a marker and a flag. Reporting from Rosarito, Mexico, I'm Erin Siegel.
Internationally renowned author Carmen Tafoya just premiered her new poetry and art book, Rebosos. The National Association of Chicana and Chicano Studies has said her work gives voice to the peoples and cultures of this land. Tafoya was born and raised on San Antonio's west side. This year, Mayor Julian Castro named her San Antonio's first poet laureate. Tafoya visited the Texas Public Radio studios and starts our conversation with an explanation of the rebozo.
Rebozo is a traditional Mexican shawl. We know that it's being, you know, printed, it's published and talked about and worn in Mexico at least since the arrival of the Spaniards, but we actually think it may have been based on the Indian tilma, which was a big square of cloth that was worn like a cloak. And then, because the Spaniards required that people cover their heads in church, that the women cover their heads, then the tilma lengthened so to become a long rectangle. So it's a rectangle of cloth. It can be made very inexpensively. It can be home woven. The finest ones are made in beautiful factories where they actually traditionally wove golden threads into the fabric itself. Silk, all kinds of different styles of rebozo, and they're quite elegant and can be worn in a variety of ways.
Do you own some?
Oh, yes. They're a staple in my wardrobe. If I have to go someplace quick and I don't have time to change, I grab a really dressy rebozo and drape it across my black turtleneck and blue jeans, and I go to the function
makes
and
the
I
outfit.
Can read and it makes the outfit, yes.
Now, why did you choose a rebozo to symbolize women and their experiences?
Well, actually, the origin of this book was a series of rebozos paintings by Catalina Gárate, who lives in San Jose, California, and had done a series of 16 oil paintings. Beautiful, moving paintings, all based on her field research in rural Mexico. And so she was sketching out rural Mexican women in the fields in the 1950s and 60s, and then in the 70s began to paint them onto the canvas. And it was such a stunning series. I never forgot it. We were visiting her, and she pulled them out of her closet, and I just gasped. And it's a long story, but basically, Sally Andrade said, "This is stunning, and this poem is stunning. I want to exhibit Catalina's art and your poetry together." And I said, "But she has some paintings that I haven't written anything about." And she said, "You could write them." So she gave me the mandate. And so for 17 years, we worked together, Cata and I. I would write, and then I would show it to her. And she would say, "No, this isn't the woman that I met." Because I was trying to do something. I was trying to verbally illustrate the paintings.
Wow. And these paintings are powerful. The women often don't have a defined face.
Right.
So it could be almost
very
anyone.
Often you don't see the face. Either the face is in the shadows, the face is wrapped in the rebozo. The woman is looking away from us. We are actually capturing her emotion from the drape and the fold of the rebozo, from the color or the texture of the rebozo. And she chose universal female experiences like waiting, like sensuality, like nurturance, like hope, like grieving, longing. These were emotions that she wanted to transmit through each of these women, and she did it through the rebozo. So I thought I needed to give a voice to these women, And it was very hard. Some of them were very easy. They came out immediately, or I had already written something similar to that. But some of them were a real challenge. Two or three in particular, I rewrote 6-7 times. Sometimes she'd say, yes, yes, this is it. And I'd sit on it for a year, and I'd say, no, this is not it. This is not what she's saying, because I had to hear her. This kind of poetry is called ekphrastic poetry. It's like Ode to a Grecian Urn. You look at a piece of art, and it makes you want to write something. You know, it's an expression about a piece of art. But I had a very specific subdivision of ekphrastic. I didn't just want to write about the paintings. I wanted to write the voice of the main character of the painting.
So you all both had to give your sort of stamp of approval, and it had to speak to both of you and match.
Right. I had to, in order for poetry to be authentic, it has to come from inside you. So it had to be her voice and mine. I say her, meaning the woman in the painting. It had to fit her and sound like her. And these are rural indigenous women who might never have been outside their local village, who had very hard lives. It had to be her voice, but it had to be okay with my voice and not be stereotypic or not be simply portraiture.
There's still more Fronteras with Carmen Tafoya coming up.
So many times, comadre, we'd go places together, to the fields, to the kitchens. When I gave birth, you were there. And when the rains tried to steal your harvest, I was there.
Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. We've been speaking to internationally renowned author Carmen Tafoya. She just premiered her new poetry and art book, Rebosos, A Celebration of Women.
In the book, we have the full-color painting on the right, and on the left, we have a poem in English and a poem in Spanish. And when we had the premiere for the book, just last Saturday, what I did was blend the two together because we had audience members that spoke English and audience members that spoke Spanish. So I'd have a little bit of the Spanish poem, a little bit of the English poem, back to the Spanish poem to try and include everybody.
And that was here in San Antonio, that premiere.
Yes, because we have a bilingual, a vibrant bilingual population. And it also brought the reality of that woman in because it, in some of the instances, when I was writing about the women, I told Catalina, I said, I can't write this in English. I've written this poem in Spanish, but I can't do it in English because she doesn't speak English. and she'd spur me on, and finally I'd managed to make something that was not a translation, because translations are often inferior. It's very easy to make an inferior translation. And I wanted it to be authentic and come straight from her voice. So I'm going to give you something that's a combination of the Spanish and English of a painting she calls El Almuerzo, which means the lunch. And the poem I wrote on it in Spanish is called Los Taquitos, and in English, These Tacos. Los taquitos que traigo los hice para ti, para tu boca, que yo conozco muy bien. These tacos I made for you, for your mouth, whose taste I know so well. I know your belly too, and your hungers, your sighs and your desires, the rhythm of your chest, the softness of your breath, the way you burn me with your gaze, fill me with the heat of your skin, your eyes half closed, my lips half open, my shivering spine, your hands, my moans, your mouth, whose taste I know so well. In these taquitos, the meat is chopped small, bien chiquita, picadita, and soft. For that missing tooth of yours, they're stuffed with tomatoes, sprinkled with cilantro, covered with chile that bites. Un besito de sal, lemon drizzled like summer rain, and always add plenty of frijoles, beans, because you like them. These taquitos I made for you, for your mouth, whose taste I know so well.
That's very sensual. What does the photo look like for that one? The painting, now I'm curious.
It's a woman sitting with a basket looking off into the distance. And you imagine she's looking off into a workplace or a field. She's waiting for her partner to have his break. And she's waiting for him to come, and she's come. It elicits a great deal of not just attentiveness and love, but loyalty, a sense of, I'm here and I will have this ready for the few minutes you have of break to eat. And that she's designed these tacos, as she says, specifically for that person. It's not just cooking. It's cooking when you know who the recipient is going to be and making it the way they like it best.
Let's hear another one. Tons of favorites in there.
Yeah, and this one is the voice that goes with the painting Dolientes, which means the aggrieved. It shows a woman looking with her rebozo tightly wrapped around her, looking off in the distance with a body expression that just almost doesn't know what to do with itself because she's so saddened by the loss of her friend. And behind her is a woman that's even more powerful. We only see the shadow. We only see the profile. And she's just empty, emptied by the grief, by the death, and the loss. So the painting is Dolientes. The poem in English is Going With You. In Spanish is Hasta la tumba. And I'll read you the English with just a little bit of Spanish in it. Going with you. So many times, comadre, we'd go places together, to the fields, to the kitchens. When I gave birth, you were there. And when the rains tried to steal your harvest, I was there. When you pulled a muscle, or that time I had the fever, that time you even fed my kids, toasting tortillas on my comal while you laid wet cloths so gently on my burning head. Comadrita, wanna go with me to church? Comadrita, vas conmigo to Ofelia's house? Comadrita, now you lie there on your kitchen table. Candles flicker around you like stars. Qué lástima que se nos murió la comadre. What a shame that our comadre passed away, they say. We'll really miss her, miss going places with her. But I've got one place yet, comadre, one place more to go with you. I'll go by foot behind a wooden box, going with you still, this one last time, nomás pa acompañarte la última vez. Just to keep you company, comadre.
That one gave me chills. I have to ask, since we're really talking about women, who were the women who influenced you in your life?
Well, my mother was a very strong influence, a person who didn't have many years of schooling, but loved poetry and loved learning and loved giving to people. She had a real sense, she has a real sense of giving to others, a very compassionate heart. She's about to turn 95, and she's still very active and very bright. She still reminds me that didn't I have a dental appointment tomorrow, or, you know, is as my little one gotten out of school yet, and things like that. She's a very caring, giving person, so it makes it easy to identify with other people, and I think that's one of the things you have to do with poetry. You have to become passionate. You have to feel with that person. You have to feel what they're feeling, and that creates a more authentic poetry, a poetry in the voice of people. My favorite poetry is the poetry that is told in the voice of common people. Very simple language. It's very hard sometimes to write that poetry and have it come out poetically, but I think there's incredible poetry on the streets of our city, and there's incredible poetry among people who might not even have any schooling at all.
So is the book already out?
Yes, yes. We just had the premiere, the debut. We will be having other ones. The University of Mexico, UNAM, has requested one, and they're talking about having one for the Library Foundation, especially given the success of the beautiful night at the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center, a really magical night where we brought together dance, art, music, and theater. Because I grabbed 13 people that I thought could portray visually these women. So while I read the poem, the piece of art was projected on the back wall, and a woman would enter on stage and simply become a living echo of the actions of the woman in the painting. And they did beautifully. It drew on everyone's authenticity so that they weren't just acting. They were really transforming themselves. This one that I just read, the Comadrita poem, was portrayed by Dr. Norma Cantú. And she told me afterwards that when she came on stage and, you know, sat and looked at the deceased friend in her mind and was doing her grieving, and then she froze in an echo of the painting, and then I read the poem. She said she was moved to tears. So here was a person grieving who was crying on stage, but she wasn't crying as part of the acting. She was crying authentically because of the loss of different comadres, of different friends and co-mothers.
This year, San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro named Carmen Tafoya San Antonio's first poet laureate. She was speaking about the multimedia premiere in San Antonio, Texas, of her new poetry book, Rebozos. And you've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. The handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.